and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. Now, this is a podcast in which I discuss about animation, but specifically the latest news that happened this week. So on today's episode, we are going to be looking into a Pepe Le Pew movie. Then we will be discussing about the box office performance of Ice Age Collision Course. Then afterwards, we will once again look into the box office, but this time for The Killing Joke. Then soon, we will be looking into Lady Layton, which will be a part of the new Professor Layton series. And then finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And first and foremost, let me just say that I do apologize if this podcast came in a little bit later than usual, than like on schedule per se. The reason why I am a little bit late with this was because during the weekend, I was out at Con Bravo at Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and let me just say that I had such an amazing time, and I just want to say thank you to all the fans and all the people who came in and said hi to me, all the amazing new friends that I've made, all the great reviewers out there, and also I want to thank the amazing staff at Con Bravo. If you guys are interested to go into it next year, Con Bravo will be happening on July 28th to July 30th, 2017, of course, at Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. But anyways, that's enough about Con Bravo. Let's get back into the news. And first off, we are going to be looking about a specific Looney Tunes character. Now, this hasn't happened just yet, but now, in terms of Looney Tunes characters, they're a little bit in the low. Like, you know, nothing really much is happening, even though nowadays, yes, there is the Wabbit series, but anything in terms of Looney Tunes, they're not really as big as they used to be, especially in the golden age of cartoons, and even they're not as big as they used to be during the second half of the 90s with the big boom of Space Jam. But Warner Brothers is slowly but surely trying to bring back Looney Tunes in a special little way. Now, you may have heard previously regarding an animated Speedy Gonzales movie that they want to do. There have been reports regarding an actor who has been cast for Speedy, on top of also having a script ready for them. But now there's going to be another one coming by. This time it's going to be Pepe Le Pew. Now, what has apparently happened was that during the San Diego Comic-Con this year, Max Landis actually just slipped it out of nowhere that apparently he is writing a Pepe Le Pew movie for Warner Brothers Animation. And yes, this will be a fully animated feature film. What's pretty much going on there is that Max Landis just pitched it at Warner Brothers. They liked it, so now he is currently writing the script, and we're pretty much going to see what's going to happen from there. Now, on my source here on Cartoon Brew, Max Landis did post a video where he pretty much explains like what he's his thoughts on the character and how he's going to bring him back to the in the big screen in this day and age. And he pretty much shows that, like, he showed that he had so much fun writing this character. Like, you could tell that he definitely enjoyed writing this script. So hopefully, like, his goal with Pepe Le Pew is that he'll be able to bring the character onto the big screen. But not only that, but to bring him pretty much bring him in this day and age. I think we can all agree that we're living in a completely different age, how people are reacting so differently than they were when the Pepe Le Pew cartoons were happening back during the 50s and 60s. So, We don't know anything else. There has been no director casted. No actors have been playing. Like, no actors have been revealed who's going to be in this Pepe Le Pew movie. We don't know what the movie is even going to be about. Just little bits and pieces here and there. We don't even know if there's going to be a release date. We don't even know if it's going to be greenlit. So, like I said, and by the way, for those of you who are not familiar with what's going on with the Pepe Le Pew movie or Max Landis, let me just read a little bit from the Cartoon Brewer article here. Landis, the 30-year-old son of director John Landis, for those of you who don't know, he is the John Landis is the acclaimed director who directed such great comedies, including Blues Brothers, scored a hit with the first mainstream feature he wrote, Chronicle, which was followed by a string of unsuccessful films, including American Ultra, Mr. Right, and Victor Frankenstein. Landis is currently the lead writer of the BBC America series Dirk Gently's Hostilic Detective Agency, and is also one of the six credited writers on next year's Power Rangers film. Landis is still in the process of finishing a script for a Pepe Le Pew movie. There's no guarantee that the film will even be produced, and considering how long Warner's has been developing a Speedy Gonzalez film, don't expect to see a Pepe film anytime soon. Now, I do understand that it is kind of a weird choice that they would suddenly decide to go and make a movie for Pepe Le Pew. Like, when it comes to, like, individual Looney Tunes characters, it's kind of strange. Like, even for me, it is a bit strange how they decided to start out with characters like Speedy Gonzalez and Pepe Le Pew. Like, even though, yeah, they are, like, one of the higher prestiged ones, since their animated shorts, including the Speedy's debut with Speedy Gonzalez and Pepe Le Pew's for, I believe it is for sentimental reasons, they both won an Oscar, so they pretty much got that credit going for them. But anyways, like, just the idea of, like, starting, like, having Looney Tunes characters have their own movie and start out with this, I find it kind of weird that they start out with them and not start out with, like, you know, the most well-known Looney Tunes characters. Like, well, like, if they're gonna go with that route, why don't they just start off with a Bugs Bunny movie or a Daffy Duck movie? I don't know, maybe it's just me, but, like, from what I'm gathering, that when Warner Brothers wants to, like, they're interested in making a Speedy Gonzalez movie and a Pepe Le Pew movie, it sounds like they want to go and open up, like, this Looney Tunes cinematic universe where, like, you got all, like, each Looney Tunes character would have their own separate cartoon, not separate cartoon, but I mean, like, they'll have their own separate movie, and then eventually, like, it would ultimately form, like, this big crossover, like, this big Looney Tunes movie. But even though, like, when it comes to the history of Looney Tunes movies, like, after the period of Looney Tunes Back in Action, like, there's been nothing but a series of, like, trial and errors. Like, actually, funny enough, this is not the first time that somebody wanted to do a Pepe Le Pew movie. I don't know specifically who wanted to do it, but there are some people, there are some people who wanted to make some movies based on some Looney Tunes characters, like Pepe Le Pew and Marvin the Martian individually, both of which they would have, and coincidentally enough, both of which they would have been voiced by Mike Myers. They wanted to go and do that, and even I remember seeing, like, a demo or, like, this test reel for Marvin the Martian, but it never fell through. Like, They had an idea for it, but it never ended up happening. They decided to screw it. The only thing that we've seen in recent years that's going on with the Looney Tunes is actually these computer animated shorts. If you guys don't know, recently there have been some animated shorts that have been released, especially of Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. Rather they be like Tweety and Sylvester's I Taught Putty Tat, Daffy's Rhapsody, or, like I said, the, like, the numerous amount of Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoons, Like, they would be appearing before some Warner Brothers Warner Brothers family feature films. In fact, coming soon, just a little heads up for In Front of Storks, there is going to be a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoon. All of which, by the way, are made by Real Effects, the same people that did Free Birds and The Book of Life. So, just a little heads up there. Like, you know, they're funny. They're definitely great. But, like, that's pretty much all that you're getting in terms of recent Looney Tunes. So, having this strategy for them, like, wanting to do the individual characters is kind of weird for me. Oh, and this is, one more thing. I forgot to mention that, on top of that, they also want to do, like, rumors are pretty much spreading around that they want to do a Space Jam 2 starring LeBron James, which... like, it slowly but surely might become probably possible, but honestly for me, I don't have anything against Space Jam, but I don't really see the point of having a sequel, especially since the first one really was a product of its time, considering, like, we are talking about a movie that stars Michael Jordan, and the movie was released back when Michael Jordan was one of the biggest names in sports. So... now that we do have a Pepe Le Pew movie, like, okay, now even though nothing is really official just yet, like, if they decided to do a Pepe Le Pew movie, would it actually work? And honestly, like, I don't know what Max Landis has planned for this, and, like, I don't really know much about Max Landis, honestly, but, like, from most that I could tell is that, like, yeah, I did mention a lot of his credits from the Cartoon Brew article, but also that, like, from what I know is that he has a much bigger presence online, like, on social media, more so than he does on, more than his writing credits. Like, people know him on Twitter more, than him as a writer. So, with that said, like, having a Pepe Le Pew movie, I don't really see it in a way. Like, I understand Speedy Gonzales because in terms of, like, the cartoons themselves, like, they do have a little bit of a structure where it can have a story that you could pretty much grow into a feature film. It does make sense since it talks about the Mexican border and we got Speedy Gonzales with a hungry village who is his quest to go and get some American cheese. And, you know, like, you can pretty much go and incorporate an entire commentary regarding the relationship between U.S. and Mexico and how the border pretty much works. With Pepe Le Pew, however, I just don't really see it. Now, of course, nowadays, a lot of people would mention regarding the fact that in terms of the Pepe Le Pew cartoons, nowadays, with social media and people pretty much crying, like, pretty much flipping out over every little thing that seems just a tiny bit socially incorrect and stuff like that, there is that factor, but I don't really see it more because because of the cartoons themselves. The cartoons are built more as cartoons. You got this flirtatious lover, Pepe Le Pew, who falls in love with a cat. Who he mistakes as a petite femme skunk fatale, and just, like, goes chasing the cat around. And from then on, you just get a consecutive series of, like, little gags of what they can think up with it. Now, they're great cartoons. They're absolutely fantastic. Even if you watch it nowadays, they're a lot of fun to watch. It's just, I don't really see how you can take that and turn it into a feature film. Now, from the stuff that I've heard, don't quote me on this. This is not official. But, like, I've heard from a few people that apparently this could be in the style of, like, a 70s thriller where, like, basically they would do something like Halloween where, like, Pepe Le Pew would be chasing this cat around. But I don't know. I just don't necessarily see it. The worst that, the one thing I ask that I hope that this does not become is that I'm just hoping that Max Landis doesn't turn it into a 90-minute cartoon, you know. You know what I'm talking about when it comes to 90-minute cartoons. Like, when they would turn it into something like the recent Ice Age films or Hotel Transylvania or stuff like that, where instead of making instead of having a good story and likable characters, they just put all their focus onto the gags, and some, like, even though some of them can work, most of them don't, but they kind of forgot the factor that it is a movie and they have to pretty much sacrifice the most important elements that makes a good movie, like a good story and well-developed characters. So that's pretty much the worst case scenario that Max Landis could do with Pepe Le Pew, is just make 90 minutes of just consecutive gags over and over again. And honestly, like, that just doesn't work. No, like, absolutely it doesn't. Like, the thing is, it's like, I'm sick and tired of these stupid 90 minutes cartoons. I mean, if you want to go and make a cartoon, that's great. Just make it less than, like, 15 minutes and I'll be happy with it. Like, if you're gonna go and make a movie, make a freaking movie! Don't waste my time trying to do your zany animation bullcrap that, in some cases, might not even be good in the first place. Like, go and actually make a movie so that I know you can make a movie. That's all I ask. It should not be hard to do. But I don't know, like, I'm not gonna doubt Mr. Landis over here. Maybe he has a good plan with it. Maybe he has something that can actually turn out great. But with that said, will this actually happen? I don't know. But again, like, I just find it kind of weird. Like, if you are going to start making Looney Tunes movies, like, wouldn't it make sense to start, like, wouldn't it make sense to go and start a big franchise off with your biggest character, with Bugs Bunny, like, with a Bugs Bunny movie or a Daffy Duck movie or somewhere around those lines? I don't know. Maybe they got an idea. It's just, we'll have to wait and see. I just don't really understand how they're going to do this, but maybe they got a plan. Maybe they don't. Honestly, we'll just have to wait and see. And, like, even though right now, like, Speedy Gonzalez and Pepe Le Pew is now on hold, if one of them is officially greenlit by Warner Brothers, then, like, we could be expecting a lot more Looney Tunes cartoons, depending if they do well. That, and also, if they do accept it, we might, like, we're going to have to wait for a while, because I can guarantee you, if either Speedy Gonzalez or Pepe Le Pew is going to happen, then there's no way it's going to be released sometime this decade. We're going to wait until the 2020 decade to see if that'll even happen. So, yeah, that's pretty much the whole thing that's going on with Pepe Le Pew. But for now, all I could say is that I wish the best of luck for Max Landis to write the script, and we'll see how it goes if we'll eventually get a Pepe Le Pew movie. Okay, so for our next story, a lot of people are jumping around singing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, because not too long ago, there was a movie that was released, and it didn't necessarily do well. And I am, of course, talking about Ice Age Collision Course, which is the fifth Ice Age film coming from Blue Sky Studios. Apparently, when it was released in the US on July 22nd, things really didn't do well, and they pretty much started off pretty low at $21.4 million, which is apparently the lowest starter ever for an anime, the lowest starter ever for an Ice Age movie. Even when you look back at all the other Ice Age films, all of them pretty much start out more than double. Like, most of the Ice Age movies, like, Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs, the first Ice Age, and Continental Drift, they would all start off with either, like, $41 million or $46 million. And even the big one, Ice Age The Meltdown, started off with $68 million. But no, Ice Age Collision Course is now doing poorly at the box office, pretty much starting off with just $21.4 million. And everybody just cheered and celebrated, saying that Ice Age 5 finally flopped in the US, and this could be a pretty good sign that Blue Sky could probably finish off the Ice Age movies altogether so that now they can move on and make actual freaking movies instead of just this. Now, with all that said and done, let me just come up here and just say, no, that's not really how it works. If anything, I wouldn't be surprised if Fox doesn't even give two craps regarding what's going on in the US in terms of the box office for Ice Age Collision Course. Because here's the thing, guys. When it comes to Ice Age, it's not about how it performs in North America, like in US and Canada. It's about everywhere else. Now, the thing is that one of the most frightening aspects about Ice Age is that if you look at the last two movies, it is absolutely horrifying how much money these movies make. In fact, Dawn of the Dinosaurs and Continental Drift, they made a total of almost $900 million, which honestly really horrifies me that it was actually really close to actually making $1 billion. And especially, like, these aren't movies that aren't really worth it. I mean, sure, Dawn of the Dinosaurs was decent, but Continental Drift was not that good. It was pretty close to being, like, I wouldn't necessarily say it was really bad, but my god, it was really close to it. I remember, I didn't really have much of a good time there. Like, maybe the exception of the animation and the Scrat scenes are actually funny in the fourth film, but other than that, it was pretty much crap altogether. And the thing is that even as I'm recording this, the funny thing is that when Ice Age Collision Course was just released in the US, during that weekend, it already hit $200 million worldwide. So that was pretty much my biggest concern is that, okay, so even though Ice Age isn't doing well in the US, there are going to be other places around the world that are still going to go and check this out and will be giving Fox the money. So, with that said, for some of you might be curious regarding where is it specifically that Ice Age is pretty much big. So, I decided to do a little bit of research, look into each country, how much the Ice Age movies have performed, and even looking into Continental Drift, there are some countries that really do enjoy it. I know that in South America, both Argentina and Brazil absolutely adore Ice Age. And even in some places in Europe, like you get France, Germany, you got some places like Russia, they absolutely love it. The UK also, they like the Ice Age as well. And Mexico, absolutely, they love the Ice Age. In fact, in terms of international box office, Mexico is probably the one that is giving out the most money to Ice Age. But I will say this, there is something that is actually interesting, is that ever since Ice Age was released in the US, like, even though it's, like, at that moment they did receive $200 million, like, as it progresses, I noticed that there isn't really a massive jump. Like, as I'm recording this right now, they've only gotten a bit more than $250. So that is actually pretty interesting. And from what I can gather, there's pretty much a really big chance that there is no way that it's going to be up in the levels of either Continental Drift and Dawn of the Dinosaurs. And it's because of that money, the reason why we keep getting more of these movies. But so far, Collision Course really isn't doing well. And it, from the looks of things, it looks like it's going to take a lot of time to even get up to the levels of the first Ice Age movie, which, if I can remind you, made a worldwide total of $383.3 million at the box office. So, and keep in mind, like, this is unadjusted and stuff like that, so we're not 100% sure if it actually, you know, if it's going to even gather up to, adjusted or not, we're not even sure if it's even going to get up to that level. However, keep in mind, though, that, Like, Ice Age is still a young movie. Even though it has been some time that it has been sitting in theaters, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's immediately going to be a flop. Because so far with Ice Age Collision Course, it has been released in several it has been released in almost every single country that it needs to. But there is still one big country that it needs to be released, and from the release date that I saw, it's going to be released somewhere at the end of August. Like, once it'll hit that, then it'll be a true determining factor if this movie is going to be a hit or a flop. And I am talking, of course, about China. Out of all the international countries, China is the one that eats up Ice Age the most. In fact, let me just go back into Continental Drift, the fourth movie. China alone actually gave Ice Age a total of almost $68 million. And that's pretty big. That's like, that's almost half of what, less than half than the domestic gross that Ice Age Continental Drift got. But still, like, $68 million, that's still a good chunk. And with all that said, now that it has... So, like, we just gotta wait and see until what happens when the movie will be released in China, and then we can ultimately determine if it's going to be a hit or a flop. But the biggest question remains is going to be the future of Ice Age. Like, you're probably thinking, like, after the movie gets released everywhere until a while, and then we're going to get the Blu-ray and stuff like that, do you think it's going to be possible that there actually is going to be a sixth Ice Age film? Now, from what I've gathered, I heard that some directors did state that, yes, they are currently writing a script for the sixth Ice Age film, but nothing is officially greenlit just yet. We still need to see if Ice Age Collision Course is going to be big. Now, like I previously stated before, rather if it's going to be up into the, like, as I previously, yeah, like I previously stated, there's no way in hell that it's going to be up in the same levels as Dawn of the Dinosaurs and Collision Course. It's never going to happen that the worldwide total is going to be about, almost $900 million. There's no way it's going to happen. But honestly, I think the real determining factor is to see if it's even going to reach half of it. If it's going to reach $450 million, I think at that point, that's going to be the ultimate factor if this movie is going to be, if we're going to see more Ice Age or not. I can guarantee you, like, the franchise will absolutely be dead if Collision Course doesn't make as much as the first Ice Age, but if it manages to surpass that $450 million, then maybe there could be a chance that Fox will still see some value and they will still demand more Ice Age. I can guarantee you, I think there will be a guarantee, like, 100% if Collision Course will end up making more than The Meltdown, which that one made a grand total of $660 million, or $660.9 million. So, if Collision Course makes more than The Meltdown, then it'll be a guarantee we will have a sixth Ice Age film. But I think 450 will be the ultimate factor. Because the thing is that if it doesn't end up making as much, like, if it doesn't end up making as much revenue as Collision Course did, then, like, it'll be a signal for Fox that it's pretty much going to be all over. And I can guarantee, like, I can tell you this right now that, like, with me and a lot of people out there, like, I'm just absolutely fed up with the Ice Age movies. Like, they're just pretty much, as movies by themselves, they're progressively getting worse and worse and worse. And you can absolutely tell that things are really going downhill with Continental Drift, and they've ultimately reached a brand new low with Collision Course, and you could definitely tell that they're scraping the bottom of the barrel when they have to think up of ideas like a meteor shower, and then, like, freaking Sid getting a girlfriend. Like, no. Honestly, like, I understand you want to give Manny a girlfriend, And, you know, that was a bit pushing it when you also have to give Diego a girlfriend. And also, like, and this is not even mentioning the plot with pirates. But then you gotta give freaking Cid a girlfriend? Okay, that's just taking it too far. There's no way in hell that freaking moron would be able to get, like, a freaking girlfriend or someone would find him attractive. Absolutely not. That's just as stupid as the movie itself. It really is. It honestly really, really is. So, at this point, is there going to be more? Then, honestly, we'll have to wait and see. And trust me when I say that China really is a big factor in this. Like, if the Chinese actually speak out and they say that they're sick and tired of Ice Age Collision Course, if they don't give them as much money as Fox is hoping for, then there could be a chance that we could see the end of the Ice Age franchise. Now, rather, if this is actually going to happen, I don't know. For now, from what I'm seeing, it's going to be 50-50. Like, there is a chance that the franchise is going to be dead, but there is also another chance that it'll pretty much continue. Honestly, we'll just have to wait and see how it goes. And, you know, I'm pretty much rooting for the franchise to be dead. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that the franchise would be dead. I'm saying, like, there would be no more movies. Maybe, like, there would be a TV specials going along or direct-to-DVD stuff. Like, maybe they could continue with that, but in terms of movies themselves, like, right now, it's, well, like, honestly, it's on the line. It really is. I'm really trying to avoid saying that the franchise is on thin ice, because that would just be a stupid pun. I'm trying to find other ways to say it. But yeah, like, you know what I mean, that, like, pretty much, the franchise might be in jeopardy. We'll just have to wait and see how that goes. And so, speaking of the box office, let us now move on to The Killing Joke. Now, this has been something that I have frequently talked about here in the Animation Podcast, and not too long ago, Fathom Events has actually released two screenings for One Night Only. An opportunity for everyone to go and check out Batman The Killing Joke, the first ever R-rated Batman movie, and the first ever R-rated Batman animated feature film based on the acclaimed comic written by Alan Moore. And so far, the comic has been gathering a huge reputation of one of the must-reads in terms of Batman comics, one of the greatest Batman graphic novels of all time. And so they finally decided to go and release it onto theaters, and even though nowadays it has been getting, like, mixed to negative reactions, especially regarding the first 28 minutes of the film, where it's nothing but filler and just having Barbara Gordon and Batman just fighting crime, just seeing their relationship, and then, yes, they have sex, because sex, I don't know. All that happened, but apparently at the box office, it actually did massively well. It did phenomenally. Apparently, on July 25th, on a Monday, Batman The Killing Joke actually made it in third place at the box office, right under Star Trek Beyond and The Secret Life of Pets, with a total of 3.175, of almost $3.2 million. And with that said, that is actually quite amazing, because you gotta factor in several things. Unlike The Secret Life of Pets and Star Trek Beyond, it actually appeared in a lot less theaters than those two movies. In fact, going back into my source on Cartoon Brew, it only appeared in 1,325 theaters, and it only screened twice. Like, there was a 7 p.m. screening, and I believe a 10:30 p.m. screening as well, depending. But this is actually quite amazing. Like, going up there in third place at the box office, definitely showing that there was a huge intrigue for everyone to go and check out the film. And by the way, if I may take a little bit of a moment to talk about Batman the Killing Joke itself, I will say that yes, I have seen the movie. Like, I was actually there checking it out in theaters. But I just want to say, I'm just going to give out my quick thoughts right now. And for those of you who watch my videos, I will say, no, I'm not going to be doing an initial review anytime soon, but I will be putting it in the animation hat for an eventual pick for Animat's Classic Reviews. So just a little heads up there. And honestly, if I may give out my quick thoughts on Batman the Killing Joke, I honestly really am rather mixed about it. I really do have mixed feelings. Like, in terms of an adaptation, like, I would say 95% of the comic was adapted, and it was really adapted very well. There are a few significant scenes, like the Just Go Loony song, probably the best scene in the movie. They really got that right. When Batman would interview the Joker in Arkham Asylum, like, that one was great. And there was also, the infamous scene when the Joker enters the Gordon's apartment. Like, that one is actually pretty big. That one was actually really good. So, when it does hit its mark, it really does hit it well. And, like, it's almost like, it was pretty much the comic coming to life, so they really did a good job there. But then on the other hand, there are a few factors that don't really work as well. Honestly, I was underwhelmed by Mark Hamill's performance. There are some scenes that aren't really recreated as well. They have less of an impact when they're adapted to the screen instead of how they are in the comic book. And yeah, this is not even mentioning, like, the biggest problem of them all, like I said, the first 28 minutes of the film that makes both Batman and Barbara Gordon feel like absolutely shallow characters, thinking that it's all about love and it's all about sex and stuff like that, and having nothing to do with it. Like, the Joker doesn't even come out until, like, the first 30 minutes of the film, and, like, instead, you just get, like, this misogynistic lover guy named Paris France. So, yeah, like, it really is a mixed reception for me, but I wouldn't necessarily blame it that The Killing Joke would get 3.2 million just over the Fathom event screening. Like, you could tell there was so much intrigue to check out The Killing Joke. I mean, for the longest time, The Killing Joke was the most anticipated animated Batman film of all time. And they were pretty much setting everything up, saying that this is going to be a film adaptation of The Killing Joke, one of the greatest Batman comics ever made. And they're bringing back some of the cast, like Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill, whom people say is the greatest portrayal of both Batman and the Joker. And by the way, one of the positive things I will say that Kevin Conroy is absolutely fantastic. He did a great job as Batman in here, like he did in all his other Batman portrayals. But still, Kevin Conroy is absolutely one of, if not the best, actor to play Batman. But anyways, yeah, like, it was really, like, you could tell how for the longest time before San Diego Comic-Con just pretty much broke its reputation, like, it was highly anticipated. People were pretty much buying into the hype and got really excited. And I've previously said this before, but even I bought into the hype and I went to buy the Killing Joke comic, which I absolutely do not regret. At least at the very least, now I've gained a really good comic out of it. So at least now I got that, and it really is good. So, overall, with that big reputation, like, do I feel like The Killing Joke really does, is The Killing Joke worth it to have, like, that amazing record? Honestly, for the hype, I guess so, but I don't know. Like, honestly, I don't know if for some people, if it really is worth it to check it out on the big screen, but yeah, you know what? Like, I feel like with The Killing Joke, it's this is a rental movie. Like, go see it for yourself if it actually is worth it. And from some of the bonus features that I've heard, like, if you enjoy the Killing Joke movie, then you'll absolutely enjoy the bonus features, and it'll make the Blu-ray or DVD worth it. But I don't know, like honestly, considering that I do have such mixed feelings with the movie itself, I do applaud it for its efforts on what it, like, on the achievement that it did, reaching up to third place at the overall domestic box office. That's actually pretty crazy, but honestly, like, yeah, I'm just pretty, overall, how I feel right now is just that I am pretty mixed with the Killing Joke, and maybe I'll take a little bit of a break when it comes to animated Batman stuff, or either that, or I'm no longer gonna buy into the hype of any upcoming, like, DC animated directed video films, and I'll just stick with Mask of the Phantasm. Thank you very much. Okay, so for our next story, we are going to be looking into, which is kind of a half-half thing, half animation, half video games, because I have played some of the games in the franchise, and honestly, it is a video game, but it does have a lot of animated cutscenes, and it really is more about the story, and, like, even when you bring it into a movie, like, it really is amazing. It really does work out well. And I am, of course, talking about Professor Layton. Now, when it comes to Professor Layton, like, there are some pretty good games. Like, there aren't really, like, must-have games that you gotta go and play and you gotta go grind out, like some of the RPGs, like Pokemon. But, you know, this is more of a laid-back, relaxed game where you just go out and solve puzzles. But I will say that it does also include some pretty nice Japanese animation and a real, like, if anything, this has a really solid story. Like, the Professor Layton games, they have some really amazing writing into them, and both in terms of characters and an interesting story with a great mystery into it. They actually have brought it into film with The Eternal Diva, and that movie was absolutely phenomenal. If you guys haven't seen it, go check it out. Even it, like, I remember I saw it without even playing the Professor Layton games, and it really blew my mind. And honestly, Professor Layton is definitely one of the greatest examples of how to adapt a video game into feature film. Like, this pretty much trumps over pieces of garbage like the Super Mario Brothers and even the recent Ratchet & Clank. But, with that said, now for a long, long time, Level 5, the company that made the games, apparently they have been talking about making a new Professor Layton game that would feature a brand new hero. But nobody knows who it's going to be, other than the fact that Professor Layton himself is not going to be it. Now, some people say that it could be a brand new character, or maybe it could be an adult Luke. But no, this is actually not the case. This is a brand new spiritual successor, a new spin to it. And instead, we are actually going to be getting the daughter of the professor, Lady Layton. And to translate into it, the title of the game is called Lady Layton, Millionaire King Ariadne's Conspiracy. And apparently the game is going to be coming soon on the 3DS, Android, and on iOS. Now, going into my source here to know a bit more info regarding this game here my source at Anime News Network, it says, as previously announced, the game will have a new protagonist. The presentation revealed that this new protagonist is Professor Layton's daughter, Catrielle Layton. The story is set in London, where she will solve any incident from missing cats to murder cases. Her initial purpose, however, was to look for her father, who has disappeared. Her assistant is a talking dog named Sharo. Ooh, this is going to be pretty fancy. Okay, that's actually pretty cool. So, they have also revealed some of the cast, and, there are some characters that looks like they're going to be more central for this game alone. But if they want to bring in more, the main ones that you have to keep an eye on, of course, there is Catrielle, who is Professor Layton's daughter. And yes, there also includes a talking dog named Sharo. But then also at the same time, you got a more stuck-up, what seems to be more of a stuck-up detective named Geraldine. And then you also have Catrielle's butler named Noah, who looks like is who could be the Luke of this, wait, is it Luke? Oh, fudge, I've been keep saying Luke, and, hold on a sec, I just need to double check something. I just realized, is it actually Luke? I don't know, like, I just need to double check. I need to go immediately see if, it actually is. Okay, yes, okay, Luke Triton, yes, okay, I'm good. Okay, I kind of flipped, I kind of, there was just a little bit of an alarm going into my head, like going beep, beep, maybe, beep, beep, inaccuracy, so I just wanted to double check. So yeah, it could be possible that Noah could be the next Luke. And by the way, considering that Akira Tago, who is known to be the puzzle master of the entire game series, he has unfortunately passed away recently, the designer of the puzzles will now be done by Kuniaki Iwanami. So, with all that... Oh, and also, one more thing. There is a female artist who will go and perform the theme song of the game. So, with that said, they also included a 4.5-minute trailer about what's pretty much going to be going on, like a full-on introduction to the Professor Layton game. And may I say, with all this, I am definitely intrigued to see what's up. Especially the story where Cutriel has to go and find her father, Professor Layton. It will be definitely fascinating for Professor Layton fans to see this new continuation of the Professor Layton games. Will it actually happen? Whatever happened to some of the characters? Will they ever go back to some of the old recurring characters? I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see if that's actually going to be happening. But, on one hand, like, that aspect is pretty cool, but, you know, it is a little bit sad how, pretty much the rest of the investigations, they're not really as big. Like, in the previous Professor Layton games, like, this is all one big mystery, but in here, it looks like it's going to be several cases of, like, small mysteries. Like they say, Cutriel is going to solve any incident, missing cats, murder cases, and all that kind of stuff. It's just, I don't really know. I just rather want to have, like, this one big mystery that they have to go solve. Now, of course, in some of the other ones, like, it starts out with one big mystery, but then it trickles down to several other mysteries going on at the same time, but... I don't know, like, I'm just worried if these incidents or mysteries going on, if they're not going to be connecting to one another, like, if it's, if the missing cats have anything to do with the murder cases, that we don't know, or these are just, like, little things just happening in London, I honestly don't know, but, like, I am definitely fascinated with, what they're going to do with, the case of whatever happened to Professor Layton. So that one I'm definitely going to be excited about. Hopefully, maybe we'll see some new characters. And eventually down the road, maybe Cutriel could have her own movie just like with Eternal Diva. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. But this could be an interesting new spin on the Professor Layton games. And if you guys are interested, it'll be coming out soon in Japan in the spring of 2017. Like I said before, on the Nintendo 3DS, Android, and on iOS. And so finally, we got the Matt's Pick of the Week. So for Matt's Pick of the Week, I decided to go and check out on a book. Now, it has been a pretty good while since we've checked out any art of books or anything like that. But this one seems to be a really big one, and I really do mean big. And what I am talking, of course, is about Tashin. Now, if you guys don't know what Tashin is, let me go back into my article on Cartoon Brew, and it says the cover of the Tashin book suggests, the cover of the Tashin book suggests that it'll be used in the format of the publisher's other films-related archive books, such as those dedicated to Pedro Almodóvar. Okay, I was about to sneeze, but Pedro Almodóvar, Stanley Kubrick, Ingmar Bergman, Charlie Chaplin, and the James Bond films. So basically, if you guys don't know, the Tashin books are basically this huge collective books that are pretty much archives about, like, pretty much the some of the biggest names of cinema, including Stanley Kubrick and Charlie Chaplin. Pretty much like this intellectual look into the art of these movie makers. And so they have decided to make this huge book dedicated entirely to Disney. Specifically, the book is going to be called the Walt Disney Film Archives, looking into their animated works from 1921 all the way up to 1968. So, going back here. Now, the description, it explains right here. With unlimited access to the Disney archives and extensive research, the book's authors have gathered some 1,500 images, including concept art, story sketches, backgrounds, and animation drawings, as well as many behind-the-scenes photos to trace the origins and evolution of such favorites as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Pinocchio, Fantasia, Dumbo, 101 Dalmatians, and The Jungle Book. Transcripts from Walt's story development meetings, published here for the first time, reveal his imaginative genius in action and immerse the readers at the very heart of Disney's remarkable creative hub. This fascinating archival material covers not only the early Disney classics, but also the experimental shorts of the Silly Symphonies and the lesser-known war propaganda films of the 1940s. Widely neglected musical features such as Make My Music, Melody Time are also given extensive coverage. Along the way, we encountered the works of all the major Disney illustrators and stylists of that era, including such greats as Ub Iwerks, Albert Herder, Ferdinand Horváth, Gustav Tengren, Kay Nielsen, Carl Barks, Mary Blair, Sylvia Holland, Bianca Majori, Tyrus Wong, Ken Anderson, Ivan Earle, and Walt Peregoy. Special archival finds also bear witness of Disney's collaboration with leading visual artists of the age, Salvador Dali and Thomas Hart Benton. Now, on top of that, it is also revealed that apparently, there was another article that did explain they posted another article looking into the book. Like, Cartoon Brew actually posts another article that looks into it. And they also mentioned that the book will also have many essays that are written by some of the biggest names in terms of Disney historians, including Leonard Maltin, Charles Solomon, Didler Gez, J.B. Kaufman, and Mindy Johnston. So, looking into this right here, you could tell it is an absolute big book, and you could tell that, like, in each one of them, you'll have an extensive look, each looking into the different aspects among the art of Disney. Like, this looks like it's going to be the ultimate book regarding the Disney classics. It is going to be crazy. And this is not just going to be about the Disney animated films. This is also going to look into all the animated shorts that they have done, which is also an art in itself. So it's definitely great that they're checking out all these things and looking into just the small previews, even though it's the pictures that Cartoon Brew offers, like, the little texts are pretty much unreadable at this point, but you could tell that there are so many fascinating photos that they have gotten and that they have selected to be appearing for this book. It is quite phenomenal. And at this point, it's going to be hard to determine if you would even need any other book that is, pretty much centers around this. Now, I know that previously they have released books, the art of books, of stuff like Pinocchio and Snow White, which are highly acclaimed. But this one could actually pretty much top them all off. This could be the one that, you don't need anything else than this. However, I will say, though, that Yeah, even though this sounds like a real dream, keep in mind though, it might be a bit too good to be true. Because the thing is that, yes, it's amazing. Yes, it covers every single animated aspects that they have done for all the animated works. But keep in mind, this is a 624-page book. And it's pretty expensive. Like, if you go on Amazon and you want to go and pre-order it, right now you can get it for $190. Now, originally, the price of this book, like, when it's going to be released, it's going to be $200. Oh boy, that is insane, and that is such a huge, huge investment. Now, I don't know. Like, honestly, when it comes to books, I can understand when they would have, like, a huge value. Like, I actually have the Illusion of Life, which a good friend of mine actually got for me. And I know that nowadays the book would go for, like, what, $50 or $60, and that's, like, more than 500 pages long. That's almost in the level of this Toshin book that they have. But honestly, $200, oh boy, you better make good use of it. I mean, like, this is pretty much the ultimate, like, yeah, this is basically the ultimate archival book if you want to know more info, like, if you want to find inspiration on how to make the art of Disney regarding specific stuff. But you know what is also actually very interesting? It also says here in the Cartoon Brew article saying, reportedly, if the book sells well, Toshin will release further volumes about Walt Disney's involvement in television, live-action films, and theme parks. Which I will say, if that were the case, then, I would definitely take a look into the theme parks and the animation one. Or maybe, like, who knows, maybe they'll make more of these. Like, they'll make they'll release more volumes regarding more, like, they'll release more volumes that will look into the future of animated movies. Like, not future, like, as in after now, but I mean, like, the future after 1968, going from 1969 all the way up to, like, maybe now, or maybe just up to before Snow, before the new millennium hits. I don't know, like, it is a pretty interesting idea, but yeah, that's pretty much the one thing that, like, pretty much separates, like, from trying to immediately get it. It's just, it's a $200 book, and I don't know, like, it's really tempting, and I guess I can, I guess I can understand why it has such a high volume, but that, like, a high value, but then again, it's just, like, I don't know, like, $200 is a lot of money, and I could buy so many other books, like, so many other art of books instead of this. It's just, oh boy, I don't know, like, this is a pretty big value, this is pretty big, but yeah. I don't know, this is all just me. If you guys want to go and get it, I highly recommend you go and check out the Cartoon Brew article, to take a peek inside the book to see if this is really worth it for you. And, if you guys want to go and get it, just keep in mind that the book will be released on November 15th, and that will be all that I got for this week. So thank you guys so much for this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com. Just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be wonderful. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then go hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.